This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We turn our attention now to Lilliesleaf Farm. Not an unfamiliar name to any of us, but there is a threat that it could be facing closure, which would make this very important, world-renowned museum and custodian of South Africa's liberation history and heritage to be, you know, put into the archives of our history instead of continuing to be an archival record of history itself. I'm going to be joined on the line by the CEO of the Lilliesleaf Trust, Nicholas Wolpe. Good morning, Nicholas, and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lukunda. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
And thank you for making the time. I mean, Nicholas, you don't even need to introduce Lilliesleaf Farm. We always see it year in, year out, politicians and government and other political parties when they commemorate, you know, the Rivonia trial, the place that was played by the farm in the struggle and so on. So it's not unfamiliar to us at all. But here we are today. How have we gotten to the point of, you know, Nicholas, now being worried about not being able to pay workers, not being able to meet your overheads, and that you might actually face closure?
Look, Connor, I think what we need to do is put your question into a much broader context regarding why are we here today?
Yeah.
I think the important thing to understand, it's not something that just happened yesterday. It's not something that just kind of fell from the sky. And it is not completely a consequence of COVID-19.
Yep.
I think we must understand it. For the last 11-odd years, Lilliesleaf has been struggling financially.
Mm.
It has had a hand-to-mouth existence. It has been extremely difficult to secure core operational funding for the organization. What COVID has done is it's just highlighted, it's magnified, and it is given a clear indication of the state of this sector within our society. And I think that's also something that needs to be recognized and realized. And in saying that, we're living at a time, not just in South Africa, but globally, where history and the importance of history is being relegated. You
yeah.
used the word a moment ago by saying, you know, we face the threat of Lilliesleaf being relegated to the archive of history. I want to say something slightly different, and I'm drawing from a phrase of Ronald Reagan when he was president of the United States, when he said what he's hoping to do is relegate the Soviet Union
yeah.
to the rubbish heap of history.
Mm.
And it may sound harsh, but that is what is currently happening. And it's not just happening to Lilliesleaf.
Absolutely.
It's fortunate because, as you said, it's got a world-renowned reputation. It's got a high profile. Its significance and role within the liberation struggle is unquestionable. It provided a safe haven. It wasn't just a safe haven. It was the headquarters of the movement.
Mm.
And what happened at Lilliesleaf effectively redefined the trajectory of our liberation struggle, which ultimately led to 1994.
Now, Nicholas, let me just ask you, let's take a step back. I mean, you talk about 11-odd years of struggle for the farm and so, and it's running. But in your understanding, given how Lilliesleaf Farm is positioned by the Department of Arts and Culture and government generally, have they demonstrated a financial obligation? And just for my own curiosity, in case I may have missed this, aren't you termed a heritage site in our country?
You're correct. Let me, again, you've raised a very interesting point, and it ties up with what I like to say the kind of archaic approach that government takes to history and the preservation of our history mm. and the role that our National Department of Arts and Culture, or I should say now Sports, Arts and Culture, plays. And I think in order to give effective meaning to this question, I would like to start off by saying, let's look at the chronology of the Department of what is now Sport, Arts and Culture. From 1994 to 2004, it was consumed under the Department of Science and Technology, and it had a deputy minister. There was no cabinet seat. From 2004 to 2019, it was a standalone independent department. And then for some inexplicable reason that the government only knows, it was merged with the Department of Sport. Now, that, I think, is very important because it goes to the heart of the problem and the question you've just asked. And that is, we have a situation where I don't believe that the art, cultural, and heritage space is given the due importance and attention that it deserves. It's always been on the periphery. It has always been isolated. And we also have this very peculiar situation, which is an anomaly to South Africa and not to the rest of the world, which basically says, unless you're a cultural institution, not a national heritage site, but a cultural institution, which effectively means you are owned by government, you are not able to secure funding for operational purposes. And I do believe that is unconstitutional. I believe that any site, independent site, whatever its focus in terms of its role within the historic space is, should be entitled to receive government grant, government support, and government funding, because they all have a role to play in ensuring that our history is preserved. And I think, again, and I'm sure you're very much aware of it, the whole scenario around how artists have been treated under COVID. I mean, that to a large degree also shows how little care or consideration or importance it is attached. And I'm sure you would also agree that the theatre played a very important role during the struggle against apartheid. It was a place where they could covertly and subliminally, for want of a better word, put into the play things which attack the apartheid state and that abominable system. And look where we are today. We have the Athol Fugard Theatre in District 6, which is closed. We have Peter Dirk Ace's theatre in Darling closed. I was told recently by an auctioneer that he has on his books about 15 independent heritage sites, which they are trying to auction to either raise money or to sell to keep it going, hoping that a benefactor will buy it and then run it or pump the money in. I mean, why are we in this situation?
In fact, Nicholas, you are raising something very interesting. When you are in this precarious times you find yourself in as Lilleslie Farm, what happens when there is a benefactor who is not South African, but says, look, I've got the money, I want you to succeed, but I'll have a bit of interest. What threat is that to the very essence of our heritage when we risk some heritage sites being, you know, procured for the mere sense of needing to exist to other people, other interests beyond our borders who don't have the attachment to our history as we do, but may want it to be part of their, you know, asset books because it looks good to have it?
Well, firstly, let me tell you, if a benefactor came to me and said, I'm willing to give you 100 million rand under the following terms and conditions, one being I get a stake in Lilleslie, my answer will be no, for the simple fact of what you have just highlighted and raised in your question. Our heritage is not for sale. Our heritage is not some commercial product that can be auctioned off to the highest bidder, particularly to a benefactor that is coming from another country who may think they have an understanding and appreciation of our history, but ultimately don't. So if you were to say to me, would you sell our crown jewels to stay alive to an overseas benefactor or stay closed? I would opt for staying closed. Why? Because it is our history. It is our story. It gives us, it tell the story of who we are, where we came from, what we were trying to achieve. It is the basis of creating our national identity, our collective, our understanding as people of South Africa.
Mm.
And that is very important. I mean, for example, I was approached to buy the Freedom Charter because it was going to be sold by Bonham of the UK,
yep,
one of the Freedom Charters. And I was asked to intervene as Lilies, and I did, and we bought it because we could not allow such an important document to fall into the hands of an overseas collector. I mean, do you think the United States of America would allow, let's say, you to come along and purchase the Declaration of Independence? I don't think
so. No, of course not. In fact, this is why it was quite amusing when we were said to have sold some of the 1994 ballot papers to Americans, because, I mean, exactly what you are saying. But just for interest's sake, Nicholas, I mean, that was an important intervention. About how much was the Freedom Charter going for?
We bought it for £60,000 back then, which at the time was quite a lot of money.
Yes.
But it was worth £60,000. And ironically, most of the money came from overseas donors who said, we cannot allow your Freedom Charter to be put into the hands of a benefactor or an owner who's not South African. And to come back to your earlier point about, you know, funding, since 2016, most of our funding for Lilies Leaf has come from either the Swede or the Norwegian.
Mm.
We have not received a lot of funding from within South Africa. And that itself is a travesty. It says that people value our history more than we value our own history, which is a sad state of affairs.
Do you feel hard done over the years, Nicholas, given how much attention politicians give to Lilies Leaf Farm when there is political currency to be gotten, particularly those politicians who are part of the governing party and have influence not only on government policy but the disbursement of resources?
No, I certainly don't feel hard done by, because I've come to realize that's politics for you. People, when it's politically expedient, will behave in a particular way. You know it, I know it, and most of the population know it. So it doesn't surprise them that they do it. What surprises me more, and what shocks me more, and what really upsets me more, is that we can systematically allow our history to, as you say, slowly but surely being relegated to the historical archive, to the point where we will lose the most important history. I'm not saying the history of our country going back is not important.
Yeah.
But I think we all must acknowledge the most crucial and most critical history is that period from 1948 to 1994. That is what really defines them. But again, I'm not in any way undermining the importance of the collective history of this country that goes back to the Khoisan people.
Yeah.
But I think you and everyone else would acknowledge the identity of South Africa, who we are, what we're about, was shaped within that colonial framework of 300 years of oppression, which manifested itself ultimately through that period of the institutionalized racism that was inflicted upon the majority of our people by a warped ideology which had its grounding in Nazism. And that's something that we must preserve, and we're not doing anything to preserve it. I mean, it breaks my heart to think like someone like Robert Sobukwe is fading from our history. I mean, he was an amazing man, but he doesn't get the due attention that he deserves.
Yeah. In fact, even when you do the Robben Island tour, some people will say even the Sobukwe House at times you don't get off to go and see it for what it's worth. But, Nicholas, let's come back a little. In 2019, you reached about 15,000 visitors and you were targeting 18,000 in 2020. Of course, COVID happened. But just tell us the demographics of the visitors that you get and the importance of those visitors and what it is that they take away out of Lilliesleaf so that we highlight the importance of this institution and why it so should remain.
Okay, firstly, I'm not interested in demographics. Why do I say that? Because this we should not be something that is reduced to some form of marketing conceptualization, if that makes sense to you. You know, when you define the demographics in terms of trying to sell a product. History is our collective consciousness. History is our collective understanding of who we are as a people. It also gives a collective understanding to international visitors coming in. And if I may just deviate for one second, I mean, what I find interesting, the parallels between our struggle and the civil rights struggle in America, they are so similar. And we shouldn't go down into demographics because, in fact, they speak to each other in many respects.
No, absolutely. And I think, Nicholas, demographics in my sense, in a very expanded way, would also include whether you've got, you're seeing a lot of international visitors to local visitors, school children coming. So, I mean, in terms of demographics, I'm very quite expanded in what I had in mind when I asked that question for an institution such as yours.
We get a cross-section. Unfortunately, the majority, it's a slight majority, are overseas. Visitors. And I can explain why. One of the reasons why, again, is when I've made reference to in the past about our history fading, we are living through a time where we do not actually know our history. And let me give you two examples. About 10, 11 years ago, I was walking through Nelson Mandela Square and I bumped into a friend of mine. He asked me to come over. And then he said, please tell these two people what you do. So I said, have you heard of Rivonia to them? And they looked at me, and their look was rather kind of like quizzical, like, why are you asking us about Rivonia?
Yeah.
And eventually, after a second, they said, yes, the road. Now, if we had been effective in preserving and keeping our history alive, our history would not have become lost in translation. Because if I had said to them, Rivonia, what I would hope they would say was, yes, Lilliesleaf, the raid on Lilliesleaf, the Rivonia trial. And I like to draw the comparison with Gettysburg in the American Civil War, the famous battle. I mean, if you say to an American, you know, have you heard of Gettysburg? They're not going to suddenly say the town southeast of Washington, D.C. They're going to say, yes, it was the most defining battle in the American Civil War. See, that's the first. And then I was told another lovely story by the CEO of the O.R. Tambo Foundation.
Yes.
She was at an event and someone found out that she was the CEO of the foundation. And that person came over to her and said, I wonder if you could help me. Could you please tell me I understand the Tambo part, but what I don't get is the all.
Oh.
She said, I beg your pardon. He said, yes, I don't get the or part. It's or Tambo. She said, it's not or Tambo. It's O-R Tambo. I mean, I know you laugh, and it is very amusing, but underlying that amusement, it highlights the stark reality of where we are as a country in terms of understanding and acknowledging our struggle. And I would like to also say, while I'm talking, it's also very important that we acknowledge our women, because in that lack of understanding or failing to appreciate women in our struggle have got a very, very raw deal. They are completely ignored. They are completely marginalized. I mean, you know, Winnie is a prime example, the mother of our nation. I mean, Where is she really recognized? Where is she really acknowledged for the brilliance of what she did?
And at Lily's Leaf, Nicholas, how have you tried to bridge this gap in terms of what you curate? Of course, I'm sure you don't always focus on those who may have been camped there and then during the raids, those who got arrested. Have you tried to use your space as a place to curate some of these figures you say have been forgotten in our history?
Well, I mean, I have to be honest and say we have failed dismally when it has come to acknowledging women in the struggle. And I remember very poignantly when Winnie last visited Lily's Leaf, she said to me, please, whatever you do, Nick, Lily's Leaf must tell the story of the women in our struggle.
Yeah.
And we are doing it now. So we are developing an online exhibit called Women in the Struggle 1950 to 1965. It's a starting point. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we are beginning to acknowledge. And I think the point I'm trying to make here is unless we wake up to the realities that we find ourselves in, and Lily's Leaf is that stark wake-up call, we will find ourselves one day in a situation where people will say, who is Nelson Mandela? Who is Winnie Mandela? Who is Bram Fischer? Who is Wilton McQuay? Who is J.B. Marx? And because they would have been completely and utterly forgotten.
Nicholas, before I let you go, because that's a very, very sharp point you are raising, at this moment, will you be able to continue paying salaries? And if not, how much is it that you need and how many people stand to lose jobs? I understand the broad reality of the heritage itself, but there are also human beings who work there.
I agree. And that also breaks my heart because my staff have been incredibly loyal. They have put up with some of the most, not when I say unimaginable conditions. I'm not talking about working conditions. I'm talking about the fact that the years we struggled financially. So there have been years where they've never got a pay rise. There have been years where they've got a small pay rise. But they have still shown dedication, commitment to Lily's Leaf. And you're absolutely right. It's not just about the history. It is about the lives of the staff, and not just the staff, of their families and the suffering. So they have not been paid since December, and they are hurting and they're crying. And so we are embarking upon a crowdfunding campaign so we can put Lily.
Nicholas, I'm not sure if that line has just dropped us.
Can you hear me?
Okay, you just said you are embarking on a crowdfunding campaign and I lost you a little.
Yes. So we're embarking upon a crowdfunding campaign to try and raise sufficient funds in the short term to put Lily's Leaf back on its feet, to enable us to pay the staff, enable us to go in and address the dereliction.
And what is your target for that crowdfunding?
I'm being 10 million. I think I'm being slightly optimistic, but I would love to try and raise 10 million with the crowdfunding, which would enable us to pay the staff, fix the place up, and keep it in a good state until we are able to address this actual funding crisis in a structural, systemic fashion, and be able to open next year when hopefully tourism and international flights and people are able to start.
Nicholas, I am out of time, but thank you so much for making the time here on Power Talk.
My pleasure.
Thank you. That is the CEO of the Lily's Leaf Trust. I don't think I'll be happy when I hear any politician saying, oh, Lily's Leaf this, Lily's Leaf farm that, when they are not actually putting their pockets and their attention where their big mouths are at, because we can't have such an important institution at the demise of closure.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.